You're listening to the MLB.com StatCast Podcast.
Welcome back to the MLB.com StatCast Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Petriello. Big fun show this week. We've got a couple people I've really been meaning to get on for far too long. My first guest is actually a new colleague. He's Darren Willman. You probably know him from BaseballSavant.com. If you don't, then if you've ever read any really interesting baseball writing over the last couple of years, Fangraphs, Baseball Prospectus, then they have almost certainly used BaseballSavant.com's information. And what that site is mostly known for is tapping into MLB's pitch effects information and really putting it out there in a way that's easier for people to use who don't have technical knowledge. If you want to know how many times Mike Trout struck out on a 3-2 curveball below 80 miles an hour, this wonderful site could do that. And big news last week, Darren Willman, proprietor of the site, has joined us at MLB.com as the Director of Baseball Research and Development. Darren, how are you?
Doing good, Mike. How are you?
Doing great. So I think what everybody wants to know is, how does a guy who was working in the district attorney's office go to being a name everybody in baseball wants to know in basically just over 2 years?
Well, you know, it's kind of a funny story. I was sitting on my couch almost 3 years ago, and I came across the PitchFX data. Having a technical background in computer science, I thought it was really cool. I'd never heard of it, never seen it. And I also have a baseball background. I played all the way up to, through college. And so I thought it'd be really cool to just grab all that data that MLB puts out and see what I can do with it. And Baseball Savant just kind of grew out of, you know, playing with that data and coming up with some cool ideas that I hadn't seen around the internet. And it just kind of grew from there.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you know, you also got a profile in Rolling Stone. So your public profile has really grown over the last 2 years. What did your coworkers at work think about this? You were a developer at the district attorney's office. Did they really have any idea what was going on kind of behind their backs?
No, they hadn't. Well, they do now. I mean, my boss, after he found out about it, I mean, he was super excited for me. He thought it was awesome. I mean, even now, like, I have his full support, so... You know, he expected at some point I would probably either leave for a team or MLB. And when I told him that I would be leaving for MLB, he was just super excited for me. So it's nice to have that kind of backing like that. All the notoriety and just for our site has been extremely overwhelming and cool.
You mentioned, talking about maybe working with teams, and I know you've had interviews with a couple of teams. What made this opportunity kind of work out for you where those maybe didn't?
Well, I really didn't want to move into a position where my stuff wouldn't be public. I kind of enjoyed getting to know a lot of people, and I felt like working for a team, I wouldn't be able to showcase some of the cool things that can be done with the data. Working for a team, everything I would do would be private, and no one would ever get to see any of the cool things I do. It'd just be for them. So that's kind of what made me really want to join MLB.
So your title is Director of Baseball Research and Development. So tell me a little bit about what that means, what's your day-to-day going to be, what's different from what you'd been doing with the site before?
Well, we're still kind of working on the scope, but it'll basically be what I was doing at night during the day.
Isn't that the dream?
Oh, man, tell me about it. It's definitely the dream. So... I'm going to be researching cool ideas for, you know, PitchFX as well as StatCast. Over the next year, we're going to be integrating Baseball Savant into the MLB platform. So all the cool features you see on Baseball Savant will definitely be available at some point on MLB.com. We've talked about all the spray charts, the exit velocity stuff. I have some awesome ideas for what we can do with the StatCast. Hopefully you'll see some very cool new charts. It's truly a dream job for me.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the charts because I think that's a big part of what made your site successful. It's not just outputting data, although it is that as well. It's a whole bunch of different ways, whether it's, you know, circle charts or pie charts, bar graphs, anything you can think of, spray charts, heat maps, to really visually show this. And I think that helps get the information across to maybe people who aren't as super nerdy about it or in-depth as a lot of us are. So, you know, is that something that you think really was a kind of a big way to set yourself apart and something that you think we can kind of integrate here?
Yeah. And this, I mean, when I started, you know, I wanted to make it as easy as possible. That's why, like, all my sites are just extremely minimalistic. I want them to be user-friendly. And like you said, like, I want people to be able to look at the data and actually understand what's going on. Similar to, like, my spray charts from Exit Velocity, you can look at a spray chart like that really easily and say, hey, this ball's red, it was hit hard. This one ball's blue, it was hit softly. So, yeah, no, I mean, we're definitely going to have some cool stuff like that out on the MLB site. It's going to be easy to use, and it's going to be awesome.
So when you were running your site on your own, you were able to tap into the PitchFX feed that is out there, and a lot of different sites use that. Have you had a chance to actually look into the differences between what you could get publicly and what you might have a little more access to now?
I've looked a little bit. I haven't seen completely what I'll have access to, but I know there's a lot of cool things, and I'm super excited to get access to.
Yeah, well, because I think one of the things you do really well is it's just the random tweets, right? And what I mean by that, here's a good example from this morning. You just pointed out the percentage of pitches above 95 miles an hour every year since 2008, and it's like 4%, 5%, 5%, 6%. And then all of a sudden this year it's 9%. And obviously that speaks to a larger trend in baseball. But that's the kind of thing where I think like 3 or 4 or 5 times a day there's just a tweet from you with this information. And just in 140 characters, it's really shed some light on something interesting. And I think even just those have kind of led to larger research projects and articles that people have written. Does that mean you're basically just staring at the data all day and looking for cool stuff to get out there?
Yeah. I mean, like I have an idea of, like, usually my ideas come from watching a game. I'll say, you know, Jared Weaver throws a super slow curveball. Let's see how many curveballs, or how slow it is historically. I mean, the data only goes back to 2008, so kind of hard to tell, but I think that's a decent range, you know, 7 years. And come to find out, Jared Weaver, I think I tweeted out earlier this year, he had a historically slow curveball this year. So stuff like that, I'll just watch a game, think of something. And like I said, you know, having a baseball background really helps understand, like, what a true fan might want. Because I'm also a baseball fan as well.
Yeah, and then I think you played up into college, right?
Right.
Yeah, and so that helps you with a little bit of the background. And I know that you had actually had privately teams reach out to you for information. So is projects you've been working on kind of off the books that maybe people don't know about?
No, I mean, I haven't done any actual contract or project work for an actual team, but Evan Drellick from the Houston Chronicle did write an article last season about how Jed Lowry used my site for exit velocity data to prove that he was actually hitting the ball hard, and it was just bad luck from his at-bats. I thought that was, like pretty cool, you know?
Yeah, so now you're here, you're starting or soon. What's your first big project? Like, what are you anxious to put your teeth into immediately?
Oh, I just can't wait to get access to the StatCast. I've been sending myself emails for, like, I don't know, the past month or so, just coming up with ideas of, like, what I can do. And it's basically, like, I've sent myself 15 emails in the last month. Yeah. Just on different, like, ideas for, like, heat maps and player positioning and, you know, routes, just charting out routes and doing all. I mean, I just have so many ideas. It's going to be pretty crazy once I do finally get access to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I should admit I'm in no way unbiased here, because I'm hoping that all your good ideas help turn into interesting articles that I can write from working with you.
Oh, I mean, hey, but that's a good, you know, that's the beauty. We can brainstorm about, I'll be getting paid to brainstorm with you about this. I can't be more excited about that.
That's great. So let's say look a year from now, right? I know this stuff's going to be iterating for years and years and years. What do you hope to have achieved, you know, a year from now that we can point back to and say, wow, that was so super cool?
Basically, I would like to at least have the functionality of Baseball Savants on MLB.com somewhere, however we decide to do it, as well as integration with StatCast, meaning you can run a search similar to you do on Baseball Savant, but let's see all the routes that Mike Trout ran on line drives. And then we chart it out, and you'll have that. Or let's see all the player positioning this player had on ground fly ball to the outfield or something like that. That's what I really want. I mean, the next year or so, I think that is achievable.
So I think that's the big takeaway here is I think a lot of people, when they found out that you were getting this position, that they were worried that the functionality of Baseball Savant would be gone. It would go away or be private. And what we're saying is that people are still going to be able to use it, at least in some form.
Yes. I mean, the reason I was hired is because they love MLB, love baseball a lot, and they certainly don't want to get rid of that functionality. So all the fans should know that Baseball Savant will live on. It will just live on under MLB.com somehow.
Oh, that is outstanding news. And as you know, I've been kind of bugging you for months with help of stuff, and now I'm actually glad that you're going to be paid to do specifically that. So couldn't be more excited. Darren Willman, Director of Baseball Research and Development as of right now, better known for Baseball Savant. Follow him at Darren W. Darren, thanks so much.
Thanks, Mike. Good talking to you, man.
Take care.
Welcome back to the MLB.com StatCast podcast. I'm your host, Mike Petriello. Really excited about my next guest, former big league pitcher, recently hired by Boston as a scout and then promoted to a much more important position, Brian Bannister, the Director of Pitching Analysis and Development for the Boston Red Sox. Brian, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well. Great to be here.
Brian, can you explain a little bit about that title? As far as I understand, it's a newly created position. It's something the Red Sox never had before. And as far as I understand, you're not just working with any one particular area. You're going to be helping with amateur scouting, with player development, with the big league staff. Is it accurate to say you really touch every part of the system there?
You know, I think what has changed as far as pitcher development is that now that we have new tools, you know, such as PitchFX, such as TrackMan, and we can more consistently measure every aspect of what a pitcher is doing. And so I think that information, one, is important as far as being consistent in our evaluations, and two, you know, it takes a little bit of practice and getting used to looking at the numbers and the volume of information. And so I really see my role as complementary to everybody else in the organization as far as, you know, feeding them quality information, deciphering what all these numbers mean and enabling them to do their jobs more efficiently and more consistently based on the information that we're getting.
So you're going to be working with Carl Willis, who's the Major League Pitching Coach. And I was reading when he was with Seattle, he actually had a portable TrackMan system that he used out there that I thought was really interesting. And so it seems to me like that's a really good fit with you, that Carl is the kind of guy who's really interested in this stuff and will be receptive to what you bring to him.
Yeah, he had that exposure not only in Seattle, but also in Cleveland, who heavily uses this information, and I think they've done a good job over there with Callaway, who's a big believer in it. And so Carl has a good foundation, and then, you know, I think it's just getting used to me, getting used to how I interpret things, getting used to kind of my uniqueness as far as building models around pitching and communicating that information. But it's been exciting to work with him, and I think he's going to be really, really good for the Boston Red Sox. And we've seen a lot of good things happen already since he's come on board.
When you were hired a little less than a year ago, Ben Sherrington was still the GM, and then obviously a couple months later he was gone, and now there's a whole different regime led by Dave Dombrowski. And I think he maybe a little unfairly has been looked at as very old school and not very willing to work with the new stats, but I think that's probably unfair, right? I mean, he's read some really interesting quotes about you, and he's just like, what can you do to get them over the hump? What can you do to get them to be a better pitcher? It seems like he's really willing to accept any kind of information, like whatever he can do to make the players better.
Dave has been extremely open to everything. Yes, I feel like in an unfair way, he's been pigeonholed. He does love velocity. I don't think more velocity is necessarily a bad thing at any given point. But I strive to study a lot of other aspects of what makes a pitcher useful. One of my favorite studies is why do some hard throwers not get anybody out and why do some soft tossers get everybody out? And I've done all these studies, and I consistently do studies as far as what those characteristics are and how do we identify them, how do we develop them, and how do we implement them at the big league level. And just sharing some of those concepts in addition to velocity, it's been a really fun dialogue, and I think we've made a lot of progress as far as me learning him and him learning me and being open to new forms of communication regarding that.
When we look at all the new StatCast stats we've had this year, spin rate and extension, exit velocity and perceived velocity, a lot of this stuff, it's been around in theory for many years, and now we can actually measure it. When you're trying to develop pitchers, which one of those really stands out to you as something that you can not only use to measure but maybe help improve?
I don't think it's any one, because I've seen pitchers who are good at any one of them have success, and I've seen pitchers who are bad at all of them have success. I think everything comes in context. A lot of the basis for my studies don't just come purely mathematically. A lot of them come from my actual experiences at the major league level, whether I was on the mound or in the batter's box, and trying to recreate what it was like to stand in the batter's box to face a pitcher like a Steven Strasburg or a Ben Sheets or an Eric Starr, or, you know, no matter if you're trying to quantify deception or you're trying to understand why some pitchers are just so hard to hit, and translate that mathematically into something that's reproducible is one of my favorite things to do. And so it's not any one in isolation. And I think in general, when I look at a lot of publicly available studies on pitchers, when it's purely math, I think it gets part of the way. But when you're actually trying to recreate the actual experience and you take different approaches, I think you can get almost all the way towards building pitching models that really represent what the hitter experiences in the batter's box.
If you take spin rate, for example, do you think that's something that can be taught? One of the things we kind of learned this year is that looking at fastballs, it's good to have a very high spin rate or even a very low spin rate, but if you have a middle-of-the-road spin rate, you probably don't have much movement, your ball's probably pretty straight. Is that something that you can identify and say, we're going to change your arm action, change your grip, or is that really just kind of a natural skill?
I believe it's genetic, and I believe it's tied to arm action. So I don't believe, and I'm speaking about the fastball, I do believe it's genetic. And, you know, therefore, when you're dealing with a pitcher, if you kind of use it as a fixed variable, you go about developing a guy who does spin the ball very well in one way, and you develop a guy who doesn't spin the ball well in a different way. And you're always trying to min-max everything, to use a video game term. You're trying to take each guy and use his strengths as much as possible and hide his weaknesses as much as possible. And for every pitcher, that's completely unique. So I look at each pitcher as a completely unique puzzle compared to everybody else, and you're always trying to solve it for that guy to maximize his production out of the field.
Do you think it's important for players, and I think specifically here the minor leaguers and the prospects coming up, to understand advanced stats? And I don't really mean that they need to be able to calculate weighted runs created in their head, but maybe understanding that you're not judging them based on batting average or win-loss or earned run average?
You know, I'm close to Gabe Kapler, and he did a lot of good things with their minor league system with the Dodgers this past year. I think emphasizing with minor leaguers the things that really matter and the things that are going to matter to them at the big league level is the most important thing you can do. And trying to lessen the importance of noise or stats that just really aren't that important from a developmental perspective, that's one of the roles of the development staff and one of the things that we stress. And so I think that's constantly evolving as far as, okay, what are we looking at? What tools do we have available? What data do we have available? And, you know, how are we judging these kids? And then how are we letting them know whether they're doing a good job or a bad job or meeting their targets or meeting their goals or not? And I don't think that's ever set in stone. And you know, as we get new tools and more information or create new stats or create new models, I think it can change your year. And so, you know, it's not just stat for a stat's sake, but it's really just a measurement of, am I getting better as a pitcher, and how do we express that and share that to our players?
And I think you must be able to make a little bit more of an impact, very similar to Gabe Kapler, just because you played the game. You know, you're not necessarily a quote-unquote egghead. You're someone who is out there on the mound. You know, you've been there. That must help you get the message across a little bit, right?
Yeah, and there's always this balance where, you know, if I'm on the mound in a bullpen session with a pitcher, I'm not sharing any of this stuff. I mean, I might give him a suggestion that has statistical or is data-driven consequences, and then that's how I got to that suggestion with him. But I don't necessarily have to say that that's why I'm suggesting this. But if it generates more swings and misses, if it generates a higher ground ball rate, if he's going to be more efficient because of the suggestion, I think that's a positive for the pitcher, and he doesn't always have to know the process behind it all and the why that suggestion was made.
Now, have we already seen some of your impact on the field? Because when I look at the Red Sox this year, Joe Kelly and Rick Porcello both got off to pretty rough starts. We're both much better down the stretch. And if you look at Kelly, he throws that two-seamer very hard. But he started mixing in the changeup, the curveball a little more. Is that, you know, directly from Carl Willis? Is that something that you brought to the table? How does that process work?
You know, I'm constantly evaluating all of our pitching assets and looking at ways to maximize their performance. So, you know, I make suggestions, and it's not up to me. It's up to Carl. It's up to the pitcher, because I've always been a big believer that if you're a pitcher, it's better to throw the wrong pitch with conviction than the right pitch and not believe in it. And so when you're going over things with catchers, the pitcher's got to buy in, and that buy-in is critical, and there's got to be buy-in from the pitching coach. So I can show statistical evidence, I can show pitch data models. You can supply any kind of information necessary, but at some point, it's got to take on a life of its own with the pitcher and the pitching coach. So, I'm just support staff, but I think both of those guys, Rick was an interesting case because I think he got a little bit away from what one of his strengths was, which is sinking the ball, and then his home run to fly ball rate increased. But with Joe's always tended to be a lower deception guy, even though, you know, he's got great stuff. And so just getting a little more to his secondary stuff, getting to a little higher swing and miss into his repertoire, and he went on a nice run at the end of the year. That's just an example of just maximizing a guy's production through just honest evaluation of what his pitches are doing and how the batted ball data is responding to that.
Now, when you talk about changing pitch mixture, I've seen you quoted in the past as far as the cutter, and the cutter maybe was the pitch that brought you the most success, but it also may have helped injure your arm. Is it your belief that pitchers would rather get to the bigs doing something risky, but get there and maybe find success and get hurt, rather than staying healthy but not making it at all?
Yeah, I think it's a valid point, and it's up to the pitcher. I would never force a pitcher to throw something that he doesn't want to throw. It's every pitcher's career, and it's his health. At the same time, I've seen guys who would never have a major league career go on and thrive at the big league level by adding another pitch. And so it's just, you get to an important discussion if a pitcher has hit a wall statistically at any given level and it can't break through. I can attempt to describe to the guy why I think that's happening. You know, you can use a combination of his mechanics, his pitch data, his statistical feedback, any number of things, and to show him. But ultimately, he's got to have buy-in, and I can suggest the change, or somebody else in the organization can suggest the change. But you know, he's got to believe in it and want to make that leap. And I think we've seen that with a couple of guys who took the leap forward this year. You know, a Pat Light, for example, who added a splitter and really had a much better year than he had the year before. And so, you know, when guys buy in, add that new weapon to the repertoire, for me it was a cutter. I never would have had a career, and you take that risk that, hey, long-term it might be a little harder on my arm, but, you know, as long as I'm in this profession and my dream is to be a big leaguer, I'd rather be a big leaguer than sit in the shadows just because I want to stay healthy.
Brian, last question. You played 8 pro seasons, split evenly 4 with the Mets and 4 with the Royals. You were teammates with Alex Gordon and David Wright, and you were traded for by Dayton Moore. What was it like watching that World Series for you?
It was awesome. To see former minor league managers of mine both coaching third base against each other, to see so many staff that had invested in me over the years. And I knew their process. I knew how much blood and sweat they had put into constructing these teams. To go out there and to be a youth-driven, internally developed team on the big stage, it was very exciting. And it was hard to root for one over the other. But you know, I think the Royals had the most complete team. I think they had a very unique strategy in how they built their team. Very, very well done for a small market team. And I think the Mets are going to be good for years to come because of that starting rotation.
Awesome. Brian Bannister is the Director of Pitching Analysis and Development for the Boston Red Sox. He's really doing some great stuff throughout the system, applying some next-level thinking to drafting and developing pitchers. Brian, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
This has been the MLB.com StatCast podcast. I'm your host, Mike Petriello. Thanks so much to my guests this week, Brian Bannister of the Boston Red Sox, Darren Willman, formerly of BaseballSavant.com and now of MLB.com. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week.